Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Got a bit of a headache today. A bit of a headache. So I might do this nice and quick. Chapter 18 of Part 2. Vronsky's mother was pleased that he banged a distinguished society woman until she found out that it was more than a fling. Also, everyone knows now. How's poor old Karenin going to be handling this? That's my microwave beeping in the background. I am Norwegian, said. Swims to the Mama Fishy was right. Everyone knows, though it's been a year and they've been less than subtle. I like the descriptions of the social rules around the gossip. People are frothing at the mouth to go after Anna in their jealousy and moral superiority, but they need to wait until the tides have turned so they don't end up being judged themselves. Feels like something you'd see in behavioral economics book. There is this invisible line everyone is waiting to pass, but wait too long and you're suddenly selling stale bread. Stale bread indeed. Today I went and bought two croissants from a brand new cafe that opened up in my town. New cafe, they said they'd only been opened up a couple of weeks, and they were baking their own stuff, and I was like, you know what, I'll support them. I'll go in for lunch. But then they just didn't really have any food. Like lunch foods, they just had like little cakes and stuff, but I felt bad because they were telling me how excited they were to start their new business, and so I said, oh look, I wanted something more lunchy, but you know what, I'll grab two of your croissants on the way out, takeaway, just plain croissant, right? It's like a little bread roll essentially. They charged me for two plain croissants $12. $12 for two plain croissants. That's Australian dollars. I will find out what that is in American, in USD. That is $8.25 in United States as dollars. For two croissants. And you know what? They were both stale. They were both old. So, you know what? I gave them a chance. I even, you know, threw him a little bone there. I didn't want two croissants, really, but I just didn't want to leave without buying anything. I mean, I like croissants, don't get me wrong. But that's not what I went in there for. Anyway, that happened today. There's a very boring story for you. What do you think of that? Would you pay $12 for two croissants? Swim said the Mama Fishy said a small quibble with question one. She's mad that it's interfering with his career. Vronsky's mother disapproves of the affair on the grounds of ambition and politics. Techrific said, and also it's apparently the wrong kind of affair. His mother approved of affairs if done correctly. An affair could be the finishing touch to a brilliant young man, according to his mother. It wasn't refined enough for her taste. Not French enough, but rather more German and carnal. What a hoot of a lady. Where did she get those ideas from? From some French tutor or something? Yeah, I think what I said was right yesterday. Like, if it was just a little fling, it'd be quite, oh look, my son was able to tempt away this distinguished lady. But she also knows, like, oh, but you shouldn't actually date her. Like, that would be a bad look. And that's kind of what's happened, I think. That's how I read it. I could be wrong. Sluggy said, we can already see the double standard here. For Vronsky, the affair is something that can raise his status in higher society, while for Anna, it is something that brings her status and reputation lower. Yeah, well, part of that is just that her status is higher than his. So when you date someone well below your status, yours is brought down and theirs is brought up, right? Would that be fair to say? Like, if a multi-billionaire decided to date a stripper, for example, I don't know, you could see what am I saying? I feel like I'm going to get myself in trouble here saying this. I think you know what I mean, though. They're on different rungs of the social ladder. And so for him, people might be like, oh, like, couldn't you get someone, you know, a bit more educated or... whatever. And for her, they're going to say, whoa, it's a damn good catch. Nicely done. That's, of course, generalizing a bit, but I'm just talking about social status. There's no reason to believe that a billionaire is any better a person than a stripper. Sluggy with 3 G's said, oh, wait, I've already read that. God, I'm tired and my head hurts, all right? And I'm scared to say anything about classes and women and men and stuff because I feel like I'm getting in trouble. I watch too much stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedians are terrified these days, aren't they? Every one of them just talks about how scared they are of making jokes. Chapter 19 goes like this. On the day of the Krasnoye Selo races, Vronsky came earlier than usual to the regimental mess room to eat his beefsteak. I'm really curious with these races. I might even look up Krasnoye Selo races. What were they like back then in terms of a race, you know, horse race carnival today? We know, you know, there's a vivid picture of what that looks like in our heads. Looks the same for everyone, all around the world. What did this look like back in 1860s? Was it still exactly the same? Is the picture that we see today of a horse racing carnival the same as 1860s Russia? I wonder. It was not necessary for him to train very strictly as his weight was just the regulation 11 and a half stone, but he had to be careful not to get fatter and therefore avoided sweets and starchy foods. He sat waiting with his elbows on the table and his coat unbuttoned over a white waistcoat, and while waiting for his beefsteak he had ordered, he looked at the pages of a French novel that lay on his plate. He only looked at the book in order to not have to talk to the officers who came in and out of the room while he was thinking. He thought of Anna, who had promised to meet him after the races, but he had not seen her for 3 days, and as her husband had returned from abroad, he did not know whether she could keep the appointment today or not, or he did not know how to find out. He had seen her last at his cousin Betsy's country house. He went to the Karenins' country house. It says in the footnote, it was customary for people who had an occupation in Russian town in summer to take a country house near the town where the family could live, while those members of it whose occupation was in town could go backwards and forwards. He went to the Karenins' country house as seldom as possible, but now he meant to go there and was considering how to do it. Of course, I can say that Betsy sent me to find out if she will be at the race. Yes, of course I will go, he decided, lifting his eyes from the book, and a vivid sense of the joy of seeing her made his face radiant. Send to my house and tell them to harness 3 horses to the calèche at once, he said to the waiter who had brought him a beefsteak on a hot silver plate. And drawing the plate nearer to him, he began to eat. From the neighbouring billiard room came the click of balls and talk and laughter. 2 officers appeared at the entrance door, one with a weak, thin face, a young officer who had just joined the regiment from the cadet corps. The other, a plump old officer with a bracelet on his arm and small eyes sunk in a bloated face. Vronsky glanced at them, frowned, and, as if he had not noticed them, turned his eyes on his book and began to eat and read at the same time. What, fortifying yourself for the job? Asked the plump officer, taking a seat beside him. As you see, said Vronsky, frowning and wiping his mouth without looking at the speaker. Not afraid of getting fat, said the other, turning a chair round for the young officer. What? Said Vronsky, frowning, making a grimace of disgust and showing his regular teeth. Not afraid of getting fat. Waiter, sherry, said Vronsky, without replying, and moving his book to the other side of his plate, he continued to read. The plump officer took the wine list and turned to the young one. You choose what she will we shall drink, he said, handing him the list and looking at him. Suppose we have some Rhine wine, said the young one, turning his eyes timidly to Vronsky while his fingers tried to catch hold of his just budding moustache. Seeing that Vronsky did not turn around, he rose. Let us go into the billiard room, he said. The plump officer got up obediently and they made their way toward the door. At that moment, Captain Yazvin, a tall man with a fine figure, entered the room, and having given a contemptuous backward nod to the 2 officers, he came up to Vronsky. Ah, here he is, he exclaimed, and with his big hand gave Vronsky a sharp slap on his shoulder strap. Vronsky looked up angrily, but his face brightened at once into its characteristic look of quiet, firm kindliness. That is wise, Alexis, said the captain in a loud baritone. Eat now and drink 1 small glass. I don't want to eat. They are the inseparables, added Yashvin, glancing ironically at the two officers who were just going out of the room. He sat down beside Vronsky and his legs encased in tight riding breeches being too long for the size of the chair. Bent at sharp angle at the hip and knee joints, why did you not come to Kranensky Theatre last night? I stayed late at the Tvoskoy's. Ah, said Yashvin. Yashvin, a gambler, a rake, a man not merely without principles but with bad principles, was Vronsky's best friend in the regiment. Vronsky liked him both for his extraordinary physical strength, which he chiefly demonstrated by his ability to drink like a fish and go without sleep without making any difference to him, and for the great mental power which was apparent in his relations with his commanding officers and comrades, who feared and respected him, and in his card playing, when he staked tens of thousands of rubles, and in spite of what he drank always, with such skill and decision that he was considered the best player in the English club. Vronsky respected and liked Yashvin, particularly because he felt that the latter liked him, not for his name and money, but for himself. Among all the people Vronsky knew, Yashvin was the only one to whom he would have liked to talk about his love. He felt that Yashvin, though apparently despising all emotion, was the only one who could understand the power of the passion that now filled the whole life, his whole life. Beside, he felt that sure that Yashvin certainly found no pleasure in gossip and scandal and understood his feeling in the right way, that is, knew and believed that his love was not a joke or an amusement, but something more serious and important. Vronsky did not talk to him of his love, but was aware that he knew all about it and understood it rightly, and it was pleasant to him to read this in Yashvin's eyes. Ah, yes, he said when he heard that Vronsky had been at Tvetskoy's. His black eyes sparkled and he began twisting his left moustache round into his mouth. A bad habit he had. Well, and what were you doing last night? Winning? Asked Vronsky. 8,000, but three of them doubtful. I do not expect he will pay up. Well, then, you can afford to lose on me, said Vronsky, laughing. Yashvin had staked heavily on Vronsky. I am sure not to lose. Makotin is the only dangerous one. The conversation turned to the forecast of the day's race, the only subject Vronsky could now think about. Let us go, I have finished, said Vronsky. And he rose and moved toward the door. Yashvin rose also and stretched his great legs and long back. It is too early for me to dine, but I must have a drink. I will come in a minute. Hello, wine, he cried in his loud voice, which was so famous at drill, and here made the glasses tremble. No, I do not want any, he shouted again. You are going home and I'll go with you. And he and Vronsky went out together. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Apologies for the speedy read. Thanks very much for listening. I will see you tomorrow.